everyone, and welcome to a special post-E3 edition of Split Screen, the show where we tackle video games one very specific topic at a time. I am one of your hosts, Ash Parrish, and today I'm joined with my other regular host, Nathan Grayson. Hi, Nathan.
Hello.
And today we've got a special on-again, off-again guest, John Walker. Hi, John.
Hello.
We just can't quit John Walker.
We can't. Too kind. And that's good. He's actually joining us today because Fahey doesn't feel very well. Fahey, if you're listening to this, we hope you get better soon.
Fahey was demolished by E3. E3 just defeated him. It was too many games.
Was it too many games, though? Was it really?
I mean, I would argue that it was definitely too many. I would not necessarily argue that it was too many games that were profoundly interesting.
So as you may have guessed, we are doing a wrap-up episode. I'm going to talk about all the things that happened or didn't happen during E3. And with our first segment, we're going to start off on a positive note. We're going to talk about our favorite games from E3. John, how did you feel about this year's E3?
Well, I've held a healthy, burning loathing of E3 for my entire career.
This one is the one that changed your mind. Wow.
Oh yeah, now I'm all about it. I went to the real thing in 2009, 2011 and promised myself I would never go again. So it's interesting doing it virtually. I've had the luxury of being able to ignore it the last few years, but not this year. And it's kind of nicer this way because it's sort of contained. I guess isn't not for most people just exactly the same as it always is, just watching a stream on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. I was actually thinking about that because this is my first E3 on the other side of the table, like actually writing about the games and just, you know, doing what I would normally do, which is like sit at home and watch, like probably sometime during work hours when I'm supposed to be doing other things, but surreptitiously, you know, clicking over on the YouTube stream to see what was going on. I have done that for like several years before, you know, this one. So this doesn't feel that different to me, but it does. It actually kind of does. I haven't slept in 9 years. Nathan, what about you? How do you feel in this post E3 fog?
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel tired like one normally would after, you know, having to do a lot of extra work. I think that I feel less tired than I would after a normal E3 because I've been on the ground for a lot of them. And there's a unique kind of exhaustion that comes after that. Because you're on your feet the whole time and you...
What? Did you ever lose a pair of shoes to E3?
I didn't, unfortunately.
That's the worst. It sounds like you did.
Oh, gosh, yeah. One year, my shoes literally fell to pieces. I had a blister between every single toe.
I thought you, lost them, as in, like, you didn't know where you left them. Like, you went to a crazy party, you lost them in, like, Todd Howard's Chuck E. Cheese ball pit.
They just disintegrated instead. Because it's like it's got to be a mile, right? The length of the convention center.
Yeah. Oh no. The LA Convention Center is hilariously long.
Yeah.
And in many cases, at least for a show the size of E3, pointlessly so.
Like, and every cubicle is made of subwoofers, and it's just that it is hell, absolute hell land.
Yeah, it's not great. So I mean, in some ways, the digital format is preferable to that. In other ways, not so much. But anyway, what about games? What are some games that y'all saw that you liked or didn't like or, you know, whatever? Tell me about some games.
I'm just going to, you know, take a controversial take right now and basically say that E3 was the best for me during the Wholesome Direct and the Day of the Devs. And I just don't care all that much about anything that happened after that, like Bethesda and Nintendo and whatever. I'm like, no. But the Wholesome Games and the Day of the Devs was like the only time I was watching E3 where I felt like excited about video games. Like, oh shit, this is cool. Like, where I was like, this is cool. Like, it made me feel good about video games. And the rest of E3 just like failed to capture that magic. Trying to think if there was like a favorite game. Like, I'm really excited about Moonglow Bay, which is like this like voxel Minecrafty looking game that's like a fishing RPG. I'm also excited. Luke was writing about this game the other day, Paralives. It's this game where you can like build your house, like The Sims, and like build your house and like decorate it and like build people to live in it and stuff like that. I was excited about that. God, there's just so many like really cool pieces of like that Day of the Dev stream and then the Wholesome Direct afterwards. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to chill over here with these guys.
Yeah, no, I was actually going over your coverage of those things because, yeah, I mean, for me, a lot of the bigger AAA stuff wasn't that exciting. Let's see, what was the one? I actually played a demo right before this. So yeah, I played the demo of Unbeatable, which is...
Oh yeah, Unbeatable. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I played the demo of that. It's like an anime-style rhythm game type of thing. And it has a really neat look to it and cool music. And then I tried the demo and, like, man, it is overwhelming. They have a little bit of dialogue where you can choose to do the tutorial. And the specific dialogue is like, treat me like I'm a baby. And I was like, okay. So, you know, easy, straightforward tutorial. And then it's like, no, everything is flying at you way too fast. There's way too much visual noise surrounding it. So you can't really like see everything coming at you. And it's like, no, you need to do the version of the tutorial that comes with like the easiest mode in Guitar Hero, where it is like one line of the same note over and over and over for the whole song.
Yep.
So yeah, that kind of turned me off the game, but it seems really neat in concept. I look forward to playing a game that is hopefully a little bit more fine-tuned than the demo they have out right now.
I was, of the more mainstream things, I was like, I've got to admit, I was interested in Starfield because it just seems like such a good idea. Right up until Todd Howard said, well, it's Skyrim in space. Oh, God, please, oh, no.
Yeah.
I mean, Skyrim's great, but I've already played it. I was really hoping
numerous times if Todd Howard had his way.
Oh, yeah, right? You played every version of Skyrim. Every time it comes out, you're like, yes, a new platform for me specifically to play it on.
Oh, a new way to spend £60 on this game. Starfield just sounds really interesting as a concept, but that really sort of put me off. So it was right. It was saved right at the end for me with the announcement of Metroid Dread, or the acceptance of the existence of Metroid Dread, I suppose.
I'm actually going to go ahead and say that Starfield is the worst game of the show, and here's why.
Oh, yeah?
Because the trailer had a very realistically rendered, like, cheese sandwich in it.
Oh, God.
And that made me want a cheese sandwich. And so I tried to get one, not once, but twice while E3 was going on. And both times, the place that I ordered from via Seamless canceled my order.
Oh, no.
And I blame Todd Howard for that.
Howard.
Yeah,
America
is
such
fault.
An odd country. If I wanted a cheese sandwich, I would get some bread and put some cheese inside it.
I mean, that would have made more sense to do. But I was covering E3, and there just wasn't time for...
You're like a Twitch streamer. You need a personal chef, Nathan.
Exactly.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I don't know if you guys follow... I think his name is like Andy. I don't know how to say his last name, but he's a chef on Twitch. And he does like... He makes video game food or whatever, but he made that sandwich.
Oh,
I'm gonna
nice.
See if I can find the tweet.
Wait, why didn't we blog that?
I was thinking about it. I forgot about it because everything in E3 is actually crazy.
Yeah, that's fair.
Lunique, I think is. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name, Andy. If you're
well,
here,
then
or if you
what
listen.
He should have done is made the cheese sandwich on stream and then either on or off stream sent it to me.
Here, I'm dropping the link in the chat.
Thanks.
Let's see. Yeah, let's just do an impromptu, like, judging of this cheese sandwich. Oh, yeah, you did a good job.
I mean, it's a cheese sandwich. It's kind of, you know, simple. You can't fuck that up.
Yeah. Oh, no, I just mean in terms of, like, getting the camera angle right. Like, making it look like it did in the trailer. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. It's not even a nice cheese sandwich. It's American cheese and then just... It's hot bread and cold lettuce. That's a bad sandwich.
That's a great sandwich. That's a lot of good texture. Okay, we have talked too long about this damn sandwich. I don't even like cheese or sandwiches.
I mean, I don't know. I think we've talked just the right amount of time about it. But anyway, so yeah, Starfield, I don't know. I think it'll be all right. I think that it will continue the long and glorious tradition of Bethesda making the same game 100,000 times.
If it ain't broke.
It is really broke, though. Have you not seen their facial animations on every game?
Yeah, like every time an Elder Scrolls or a Bethesda game comes out, like the thing is all of the bugs. So never mind, it is actually
broke. And the UI. The UIs are the worst of every of any game ever.
Yeah, but ultimately what they make sells a lot of units, so they do not have a financial incentive to change it much. I mean, I guess they are using a new version of their engine for this one. But the thing with video game engines is you can say, like, this is Creation Engine 2. And, like, even when you do that, it is often still built on your previous engine. Calling an engine a new version is wholly arbitrary. Like, people are not starting from scratch when they're making new versions of popular video game engines. Unreal Engine 5 is a version of Unreal Engine 4. It is just sufficiently improved that Epic is like, it's the new one now. I mean, like, to give a really good example of this phenomenon, the engine used for, like, Mario Galaxy and Mario Odyssey is the same one Nintendo used for Mario 64. They just removed stuff and added stuff and removed stuff, and eventually, you know, it became an engine for a new generation of consoles and games. But anyway,
I guess that's why Valve was so against. That's why Valve was so against calling anything Source 2 for the longest time, weren't they?
Right. Because, yeah, it's an arbitrary designation. But anyway, so yeah, other games. Oh, I've got one that is a little bit off the beaten path, although not really much because it's still AAA. But okay, so John, you might have opinions on this one. Stalker 2 looks good.
I mean, it does. So I don't know Stalker at all well. It was always my colleague Jim Rosignol's territory. But his passion for it has always made me more interested than otherwise.
Yeah, no, I think that I blame him for the fact that I got into Stalker and then eventually the Metro games. Like, I think that I would not have any interest in any of those if not for all of his effusive writing on Rock, Paper, Shotgun.
Did you not think Atomic Heart looked a bit more interesting, though?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that, okay, so these games can actually be lumped under multiple similar umbrellas. They're both, like, you know, they fit that mold of sort of different Eastern European first-person shooter games. And they have a very particular vibe to them, Stalker being the much more serious of the two. But they also, like, have, you know, weirdness to them. And, like, I guess the term you see a lot online is, like, Eurojank.
What?
Yeah, where it's like these games that really try very hard to be ambitious and interesting, even within the confines of traditional genres like first-person shooters. But they always have, like, they always overshoot what they can actually do. So you always get, like, something that's a little bit buggy, a little bit janky, but at least, like, has some wild ideas or some ambitious ideas, and you can't help but be like, yeah, I respect that. But anyway, Stalker 2 looks really good because it's, like, I mean, the graphics look incredible. And it very much looks like it's playing the hits of a series. So, you know, a lot of oppressive atmosphere and, you know, a hostile landscape that you've got to constantly contend with outside of even just enemies. But at the same time, that game has been vaporware since, like, 2012. And it's hard to, even when they had something that looked like it contained gameplay, it is hard to look at that and be like, yes, this is definitely gameplay. Some part of me is like, I'm not going to trust that until I can definitely play it.
Game Pass is pretending that you can pre-install it right now, which is really weird. Yeah. It's due out next year.
Yeah, I don't buy that for a second.
I imagine you're just downloading a bunch of, like, weird WAV files to your Xbox that you can never hear or something.
But yeah, and then so Atomic Heart actually has the same issue going on. In that, like, so I wrote our post for the trailer of that, and I was like, man, this looks bonkers. Atomic Heart is, like, an open world post-apocalyptic game set in an alternate Soviet Union, where even though it's the 1950s or something, the internet has already been invented and stuff like that. And
retro,
it looks really
future,
wacky.
Like Fallout D.
Yeah. But and you have, like, kinetic or psychic powers. You can, like, lift things off the ground and throw them into the air, and it's chaos. But after I wrote that trailer, I was looking at the comments, and people were like, yeah, I mean, this game looks really cool, but it's been around in various capacities since, like, 2017 or 2018, and again, it just seems like they don't really actually have anything. It seems like they just keep, you know, putting out, like, snippets of footage that don't really cohere into a broader game, so it's kind of like, same issue as Stalker. Is this ever actually going to happen, or are they just stringing people along?
What about you, Ash? Did you love anything? Anything mainstream, I mean?
The only thing, I was thinking about that, the only thing I really loved mainstream, and I don't even know if I just love it or I just, like, love it, the actuality of it, or just love it as a concept, is Redfall. Like, Redfall wins my best in E3, at least for character designs and best hair. So I'm excited to see what Arcane Austin is doing with that. It looks fun, but I don't know how I feel about another Left 4 Dead clone. I don't know if that's exactly what it is going to be.
Yeah,
maybe
I mean,
it might do something a little more sprucey with it, but I love the character concept, like the black girl with the big ass hair that was like, looked real and not like fake, that black hair sometimes can look when people try and fail. This looks like they finally got him. Like, oh shit, it's 2021. We finally got good black hair in a video game. Good job, Arcane.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, it does seem like they're not just doing Left 4 Dead clone. It seems like they're kind of doing Left 4 Dead style for 4-player co-op and then also immersive sim elements. So it's going to be like an Arcane game. I think that they will never not do something that is immersive sim-y, which I can get on board with. I mean, you know, in a world where it seems like Deus Ex is just dead again and Dishonored is, I guess, also gone. It's good that at least Arcane is still carrying that tradition forward into other genres.
But I want it single player. They make my single player games. That's what they're for. They made me Prey and they made me Dishonored, and I don't want
them
to do co-op.
That for you. They actually told me. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But no, I mean, well, the thing is, like, they've said for both this and Deathloop, you can play them solo. So...
Okay.
You'll have an option.
I'll forgive them. What about Replaced? Yeah. I couldn't believe Replaced. Like, out of
that was
everything.
The little pixel game,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
But just really so neat. Beautiful. I don't even care if it's bad. I just don't want to watch it move.
So yeah, they should release a series of GIFs, is what you're saying.
Yes.
And then it's fine. We don't need a game. Just some GIFs. But yeah, no, I mean, I saw that too. I don't know. I'm in that place where pixel art is neat. And really good, like, well-defined, very chunky pixel arts. Sure, great. Love it. Love to see it. But that alone is not enough to get me in the door. It's like, okay, there are a million of these now. There are so many of them. And they're beautiful. There are many, many games that are beautiful pixel art paired with, like, decent enough gameplay that they're not bad games. But it's like, okay, you know. I think there was a time when these things stood out more. But that time has kind of passed.
No more pixel games for you then?
Not for me. I'm really happy with them. I find them such a beautiful aesthetic, and it's not like anyone's slowing down on making, you know, ray trace beautiful rendered worlds, is it? So and no one is like, oh god, not another a game that's trying to be photorealistic. So I'm very happy for this to be a repeated aesthetic, especially when it's as, I mean, because this isn't retro, this is incredibly 2021 art just made out of pixels.
Right.
Which is what I love so much about it, I think.
Oh, yeah. To be clear, I'm not saying that I want it to, like, go
you
away
want it
or not
to fail.
Be a trend.
You want the developers to close.
I am saying that, actually. I want a lot of people to lose their jobs.
Uh-huh.
And I want them to live in misery and squalor for their entire lives, in fact, even though they're very talented. No, I don't want this to, like, this trend to go away, necessarily. More what I'm saying is that it's not a thing that, like, immediately wows me anymore. It's not the sort of thing that makes me be like, I definitely got to buy that game. It's just like, yeah, that's another one kind of for the pile. In the same way that, like, photorealistic graphics also, you know, no longer make me think, oh man, I got to play that. It's just like, no, they all look that way now.
Was there a game that anybody unequivocally hated? Like, it just made your blood boil and your insides melt just seeing it?
A game that made my blood boil. I kind of wish there was, because I like to feel strongly about things. But I think the kind of broader issue with this year's E3 is that there wasn't really much that made me feel any sort of way. It's just kind of like, you know, we did it. This was an E3. I mean, I think the one that maybe made a lot of people feel a strong way, that made me feel a different strong way, was Stranger of Paradise, the Final Fantasy origin story.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of people were like, his outfit doesn't make any sense for the setting, and like this whole game looks kind of, you know, the graphics aren't amazing, and the game seems to be pulling from all these different gameplay styles and whatever. I don't care. What I care about is that they have taken this very angry man and inserted him at the core of like Final Fantasy, and that is so funny to me. The idea that the canonical first hero of Final Fantasy could be just this guy who's really mad and who doesn't wear ostentatious clothes. He's like a normal guy. He's somebody's dad, probably. He doesn't like that he's in a video game. He wants to leave. And like, that rules. That's so funny to me.
I like all the theories that it's an isekai. Like, he's been transported from some real world into this. And like the only way he can get back is to like kill chaos or whatever.
Yeah, I think those are correct. I mean, the name of the game is Stranger of Paradise. Like, I'm not really sure you need to know more than that. It suggests that he's not supposed to be there. But yeah, I just find the whole concept really funny. I want him to be, I said this on Twitter, but I want him to be like Final Fantasy's Doom guy. But like, you know, there are all these people like monologuing and, you know, being super grandiloquent about everything. And then he's just like breaking shit and, you know, like killing whatever needs to be killed, all in pursuit of chaos so he can go home and watch Frasier. Yeah, that's my dream for that game. And then let's see, aside from that one, I guess the other game that like stood out to me, this is another one that stood out in a good way that I just want to mention before we move on, is El Paso Elsewhere.
Oh yeah. The new game from those people, the guy who did Airport for Dogs, mm-hmm. which you should all play.
Yeah. And I mean, El Paso Elsewhere looks very different from Airport for Dogs.
Extremely. I mean, lots more blood, less dogs. Yeah.
In fairness, all games look different from Airport for Dogs. But yeah, no, it's like a Max Payne homage, but it's set in El Paso, Texas, and is apparently a very personal story for the writer. And it's also, I was reading interviews with him, and you'll appreciate this, Ash. He was talking about how it is unabashedly Black, but at the same time, he doesn't want it to be just in that box. He was like, his line was like, I'm not just coming for the Black awards, I'm coming for every award.
He could do it.
Yeah. Oh, he's incredibly talented. And the game seems really, really neat. Like, just in terms of atmosphere and vibe. It has kind of like a...
The Matrix, like flying in the air and stopping, and then, like, the camera turning around thing while you're shooting people, and, like, blood is splattering everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, it like, hits those notes, but then also, like, the setting makes it feel very Lynchian and kind of, like, weird in that way. So, I mean, I think it's going like to be a really...
Because they're, like, in a hotel,
right? Yeah. I think it's going to be a very particular like balancing act in terms of tone, but it seems really neat. And I think if anyone can pull it off, it's those folks. So, yeah, the game seems neato. John or Ash, you have anything else?
I mentioned Metroid Dread. I mean, I love Metroid 2D Metroid games, so hasn't been one for 19 years.
You can finally eat.
Yeah.
You've been starving for so long. Your crops are finally watered.
I could finally get 2/3 of the way in and meet a boss I can't get past and stop playing and then hate it like all the others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the dream.
Yeah. Although I did get as close to being cross when I thought that when it started up with all, it was all 3D and I thought, yes, it's Metroid Prime 4. It is everything I've wanted. And then it was not Metroid Prime 4.
And but it was a sad. Metroid, so...
It was, and so I was at least it's still Samus, it's still okay.
You call her Samus?
Is that not right? I don't know, I've only read it. I don't Samus know anyone else. How is
Samus
it, Samus?
Samus as it ever was.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Usually, call her Samus, like Samus.
Yeah.
Samus. Oh, I don't like that. Yeah, no, Samus.
Have you never played Smash Brothers?
I have never played Smash Brothers in my life.
Okay.
Oh, yeah,
because that would have told you quick, sharp. That's how they pronounce it.
Samus.
No, I'm not okay with that. I'm sticking with Samus.
All right. Well, that's your prerogative.
It is.
You can call her whatever you want.
That's your hill to die on, alone and unloved.
She won't look up when I say her name. Okay. It'll be really awkward.
And on that note, we'll be right back after a short break.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And we're back in our post E3 episode of Split Screen. We've talked about our favorite games of E3 and some of our not so favorite games of E3. And for this segment, we're going to talk about what the hell was E3 2021 anyway?
Yeah, no kidding. It's a good question.
What the hell was that? What did we just sit through for a week-ish, kind of?
We don't need E3 at all. Let's start with that. E3 is completely unnecessary. The whole industry is worse off for it. And if it would only die, that would be a good thing. And I have this horrible feeling that this year's online version has made everyone take notice of it again.
I have a feeling it's going to come back for, in like some kind of like reduced state in person. For it'll hobble on for a couple more years before, you know, dying very slow and sad death.
But it's been dying.
I would like personally to go to one E3 in person just so I can say I have, and then it can die. Okay. Like, it can't die until I get there first, just to see what the hell y'all are talking about.
Right. You have to give it permission. If you don't give it permission, then it has to live in kind of a state of, like, it gets to be immortal, but it's like agony. So
yeah,
it's just terrible.
You're not dead until I have seen you first and killed you with my own hands. When I go, I will kill E3, and then there will be no more physical E3s. But you can probably believe that those things are going to exist digitally for at least, you know, even longer, probably.
Well, yeah, you talk about the digital side of it, and that's kind of the weird element, is like, if everyone's doing things digitally, and they're all clearly hosting their own shows, then why do we need the E3 umbrella? Or rather, why do we need the E3 organization to be involved in that? What are they really bringing to it, aside from like some very weird scheduling and a bunch of filler programming that was for no one?
The veneer of respectability. Like, well, everybody else has a industry event thing. Like, fucking magicians have, like, their own, like, professional organization where they go meet up somewhere in somehow. And that's what they do. So video games kind of has that, but nothing, like, to the same, I don't know, level of professionalism as other professions do. So they got to do something, right? This is our attempt at doing something. And maybe that's why it'll stay around for longer.
I feel like our event where the industry meets up, though, is GDC. And so E3 doesn't necessarily fill that niche either. It's just kind of like a weird vestigial limb at this point. And like, especially given, I think, the way they did it this year, because it was very much them reasserting themselves as like being involved in everything. E3 just wasn't around last summer for obvious reasons. But I think that had already sparked enough, like, is E3 dying talk, or is E3 dead? Because you also had Jeff Keighley leaving earlier that year and being like, I'm going to do my own thing, because E3 is kind of a dinosaur. And so I think if E3 had stayed gone for another year, even though they can't do an in-person show, it just would have been like, okay, so it's definitely dead. And they would not have been able to come back in any real way. But what we got instead was E3, like, being super last second about everything. They did not announce the schedule for the show until like, what, the Thursday or Friday, like before the weekend began. Like, really last second stuff.
Right. Yeah.
And then the show itself was like a bunch of weird, like, I cannot emphasize enough how weird the programming that strung the show together was. So you had the main conferences, and of course you had that because that's what everyone shows up to E3 for. And then in between that, you had these like ongoing panels that brought really nothing to the show. It was like a bunch of people who, you know, work in various portions of the hosting and influencer sphere, but just didn't really seem to be into any, like, they were doing a job. And so then between that, you also had like a whole bunch of weird, like, E3 history boomer nostalgia stuff, where it was like,
what?
It was people like, GamesBeat did like a little mini deep dive into E3 history that lasted like 30 minutes and like lost tons of viewers on the E3 channel. It's just like, what is the point of this? Who is this for? And then similarly, they had a lot of like journalists yesterday come on and talk about like their favorite E3 memories. And it's like, you know, something like that works for a podcast like this, wherein people are already interested in the particular personalities. And that's what like gets them to go along with that and to be interested in a personal experience. But if you have a bunch of people that the audience does not know and has no investment in, and you have them do the same thing, the audience then says, why should I care? I don't know these people. I've never been to this thing. I have no attachment to this. And E3 did that so much this year. And so then between that, they would have like, they had a weird, seemingly out of place interview with Nadeshot, who is the head of an esports organization called 100 Thieves.
100 Thieves, yeah.
And like that was bizarre because, again, it was like, well, this would theoretically be for a totally different audience than all of your weird E3 nostalgia stuff. But you did this too. And they also had like developer talks about various like either historical things, not about like games they're working on, just about, I don't know, random stuff. And then they had like multiple like diversity panels, which were, you know, well-intentioned, but again, different audience. And also the E3 audience was like, at least in chat, was just awful. Oh, absolutely right. Horrible. And so anytime there's any like mention of diversity or anything pertaining to it, just noxious shit until the E3 people finally figured out how to turn on emote only mode in chat, which took them forever. Yeah.
Depending on how that was executed, that didn't really go very well either.
Yeah. People were just spamming emotes that were extremely disrespectful and terrible. And I mean, I have it on good authority. Like, this didn't just stay constrained to Twitch. People got harassed over this stuff. Like, when people were on panels that were about topics not pertaining to the hottest new video games, people would seek them out on Twitter and, like, flood them.
Wow.
It was really bad.
But it's horrible because it's irresponsible on the part of E3 as well, because they don't give a shit about this stuff at all. Otherwise, they would be making proactive changes in the industry. And, you know, the ESA wouldn't just be like every now and then picking up a flag and putting it down again. They'd actually be trying to change something or do something. And so it's just done as a veneer, and then they throw those people to the wolves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, yeah, that was the thing for, it wasn't just the ESA either. I think that like every major company that presented just seemed to not understand at all or not care about handling Twitch chat. And so it was just this overwhelming flood of negativity, toxicity. And then when people had an opportunity, like sexism, racism, ableism, all of it showed up. And the chats were like, in some cases they had moderators, but they are clearly not experienced moderators. And those chats were so lightly moderated that there is no way that any of these companies could keep up with audiences of 100,000 plus people. You can't do that well unless you set clear ground rules up front, which none of them did, and then moderate super consistently so as to set the pace for the whole discussion. If you don't do either of those things and just let things go crazy and behave reactively. And yes, I'm just like quoting my own piece that I wrote about all of this on the site. But anyway, if you're not proactive about this stuff, then audiences of that size get out of control super quickly. They don't have to. As I said in that piece that I wrote, when AOC and Ilhan Omar streamed on Twitch, they had way bigger audiences than E3 did. And yet their chats were manageable because they had really experienced moderators making sure that things went down in a more mature and orderly fashion. But, you know, these big companies have to like consult with the right people, seek out experts, and learn how to do things well. It's just that for them, it's pretty evidently not a priority. And as a result, people get harassed and treated poorly. And it's like, if you are going to try to get your cookie for like doing diversity related stuff, but you're not going to make sure that those people are as protected as they can be, then I think in a lot of ways you're doing more harm than good. So,
yeah. What would have made E3 better, do you think?
So what I would have liked, here's what I would like. When you go to real life E3, what happens is, as a journalist, rather than I think just as a sort of general badge holder attendee, you get funneled from presentation to presentation and interview to interview. And the presentations are always done in these hideous little booths. And a man stands at the front with a controller in his hand and pretends to play a pre-recorded demo in front of you. So what I would have really liked for E3 online would have been if they'd had a little picture-in-picture of someone pretending to control the demo footage for every stream. That would have made it much more realistic for me.
Right, you need the man cam.
It's so lame. I remember seeing Just Cause 3 or 4, I'm very old, it was a long time ago, and they were showing this footage and it was like unbelievable and so cool. And it's like, clearly this isn't all happening live in this room by luck in front of this audience. And then of course they always fade to the title like games don't. which I love. And then, of course, they will just release that footage as a trailer a couple of weeks later, and then it would be just exactly the same thing that we saw in the booth with the person pretending to play it. And I really feel I missed out on that this year.
Nathan, as a person who has been to E3 before, how would you fix digital E3?
I mean, for one, again, I'm not convinced that we need to cram it all into a couple weeks and call it E3. I think that at this point, things like Nintendo Directs have proven that publishers can make these announcements and reveals events unto themselves, and you don't have to make it this like super cramped and overwhelming experience for everybody involved. So, I mean, just spread it out more, honestly, because the other thing is, you know, I loved the idea of like the Wholesome Direct and Day of the Devs and all of that stuff. And I think that there's an argument to be made that by being positioned alongside E3, those things might have gotten more eyeballs. I'm not entirely certain on that. I think there's not a good way to prove it. John, you look like you have.
I don't think it does. I think what Wholesome Direct proved this year is that they could get that attention without E3. No one was thinking when they announced it was going to be streamed, but on Twitch and IGN and all of this, and these partnerships they started. No one was thinking because it's E3. Everyone's thinking because they've done some really good networking and managed to get these tiny games in front of big audiences. And I really feel like they could, if that's the buzz they can create, and if they can get Twitch and big names on board, then I think they can do it without needing to be E3. And I think the problem is when you do it alongside or as part of E3, you other them. And so you've got, these are real games from Square Enix and Ubisoft. And over here are these little sweet alternatives to real games. And I hate that. I hate that it's separate and it's like the alternative too. I want it just to be another one. I want Wholesome Direct to be recognized as just as valid and important a stream of games as a Nintendo Direct.
Of course, you know, we believe that these games are just as important as, you know, whatever the hell all the other people are doing. But do you really think that if Wholesome Direct was like, okay, we're having a Wholesome Direct that as much people, like tomorrow or whatever, if E3 doesn't exist, do you think the same number of people will like see it as opposed to like, you know, kind of attaching it onto E3? Because I'm not sure about that.
I don't.
It's all about eyeballs, right? We're fighting for, you know, these small devs are fighting for as many eyeballs as they can get. And I don't know that, you know, just the saying that Wholesome Direct, yeah, it'll, you know, attract some attention, but not enough people to where, like, I think it matters enough to them.
I don't.
Maybe I'm wrong.
I can't prove it. I just wonder whether if they could keep those partnerships, if it could be, you know, main page of Twitch and if Guerrilla Games stick with them and all these various things, if everyone who partnered up with them was willing to do that again, I think it would get... Once you've got, because what Wholesome Direct can't do on its own is get noticed by the big name gaming sites that easily. And you've got to care. Like Kotaku cares enough about that stuff so it'll post it, but IGN doesn't care about tiny indie games that don't get ads, that don't sell ads. So, but make it a thing, make it a big deal. And I think maybe it's possible. I don't know. I'm maybe just be talking out my bum.
Well, I mean, I think to the point that John is making, I think the other issue is that eyeballs onto themselves are not necessarily intrinsically a good thing, right? I think that what you had at least a little bit was kind of an audience mismatch too. Like, and again, never judge anything solely based on Twitch chat as a disclaimer. That said, when the indie games start showing up, whether they are part of like the Wholesome Direct or whatever, Day of the Devs, what have you, or if they're just like, because E3 also used indie games, they like had a lot of like mini indie game showcases throughout the show. And when that happened, people in chat were just like, skip, snooze. Like they were, you know, saying all this stuff about how, like, expressing they didn't care. And so, in effect, those games, that flood of indie games, because there's a ton of them, I feel like they sort of became more filler for the main kind of E3 show and content. And I don't think that's a good space for indie games to occupy. Because, like you're saying, John, it kind of others them. And it also just means, like, they end up filling time. But I'm not sure how much that converts into new audiences for them. And it can instead lead to like negativity surrounding them, at least in the moment, which also kind of blows. But I mean, I don't know. Like maybe there is a silent enough like majority or even minority that does watch these things when they're happening as part of E3 and that does care and that then ends up going on to, you know, discover games they wouldn't have otherwise. And it like gives these games audiences. Again, it's really hard to measure. I mean, I don't know, like Ash, you know, you wrote very enthusiastically about a lot of the stuff that you saw there. Like you were saying, this kind of, those were the games you got excited about.
Yeah. Just as a, like an aside, I just did a little informal experiment and I Googled, or I used the internal search at Polygon and IGN to see if they had covered Wholesome Direct. IGN hadn't. Polygon had done the Wholesome Direct that was a couple of weeks before E3, so back in May, but nothing like during E3. Wow. But like I Google, you know, I use our search and like this is all E3 coverage from like all the Wholesome Games events. So I guess it does matter like how this gets covered depends on who cares about that kind of stuff at your publication or whatever.
And this stuff is so hard. I mean, I you know, my passion is writing about games that don't get covered in the press because you cannot be a gaming site and write about a totally unknown game and then pay a freelancer to write about that because you've got to make no money back and it's just terrible business. So you've got to have enough passionate people on staff and it's got to be enculturated within that staff to be free to write about something so tiny. And that's really hard to do if you're you know, a business with shareholders, especially if you're part of a giant shareholded company.
Yeah.
So I get why they don't cover this stuff. I understand it, but I still, yeah, even when it's part of E3 and they still don't bother mentioning it, that really sucks.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I mean, it's also like, you know, I think form and structure matters a lot in these cases in terms of both how the games are presented and how they are as a result covered. I think that even in our case, like, you know, we did posts about these individual kind of indie game showcases, but what they essentially ended up amounting to, and like, this is not like anybody's fault, but they are lists of indie games, like lists and short descriptions. And I think that for a small number of people who are already inclined to be interested in this stuff, that's useful. But I think that, you know, when you don't have something like E3 going on, there'll be like a day on Twitter or something where somebody shares a really neat indie game, like a trailer or a GIF or whatever, and that game suddenly gains a lot of notice. And I don't think there's a lot of space for that to happen during a big event like E3. I think instead you get these long lists or these long pieces where it's like, there's this one, and then that one, and then that one, and then that one, because that's the way they're being shown. They're being shown as this like giant flood, this like huge, you know, bunch of like either short presentations or sizzle reels. And like, yeah, I'm just not sure if any of that is conducive to games catching on. But at the same time, like, you know, there are just so many games, like, so it can be really difficult. I do not envy people who are trying to like release and market an indie game in this day and age, because I don't know how you do it. I think that you just need to be either someone who really has a dynamite concept and you know the right people, or like you just need lightning to strike twice in the exact right place.
Exactly. It has to be lightning. It's this 50 to 60 games come out a day on Steam. Mm-hmm. Just to get noticed, it has to be luck now. It's so crap. Although, a couple of Mondays ago, I took over your website because none of you could be bothered to work. And so I joked on Twitter saying, hey, can people break some AAA news so I've got something to write about? You know, it was like an English language speaking day off. And a whole bunch of indies developers just jokingly replied with their games, like 10 or 12 of them. So I figured, hey, why not just put it all up as a post on Kotaku, because there was no other editor there to stop me. It was like, so have a look on a couple of Mondays ago. I just said, I think it's called, if you want indie coverage, you just have to ask. I think that's what I called it. And yeah, just mentioned a whole bunch of different games that they just happened to get hold of me. I didn't know if they're any good or not. And so I've got your site again on Friday. I'm going to do it again. It was great.
And I mean, that's neat. And also it's one of those things where, again, it means that, you know, I think even in cases like that, there's just a little bit more room for them to stand out.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know, to kind of wrap this all back around, you know, Ash, like, you are still relatively new to a lot of this, at least in terms of covering it, and you haven't been to an E3. Like, what was the experience of this year's like for you?
Not to get too much inside baseball, but like the number 300 just inspires like an incredible palpable fear in me that I have never known before. Just trying to, you know, pre-write all of the stuff that we thought was going to break, and trying to make sure that it meets, you know, our standards and what we needed to meet. And it's like, okay, I don't know how many times I can say the same thing and say it uniquely, right? And then there's also the writing about stuff that didn't happen. So I was really excited to write about Final Fantasy. I wrote about Final Fantasy 16. I wrote about, you know, potential new information of Final Fantasy 7 Remake. I wrote about Bayonetta 3. None of that happened. So I personally consider all of those people, Nintendo and Square Enix owes me comp time for the hours I wasted on that and did not get a significant payoff. But I think as far as my first... Yeah.
Wait, can we quickly, before we move into that, can we clarify for the sake of listeners? So in the lead up to E3, what we did this year, and this was a new system, we wrote like a bunch of shell posts for things that might happen. If you want to look at it through a really grim lens, it's the same way that news organizations write like pre-write obituaries for people. Yeah, only we did it for video game announcements. So, you know, less life and death. Nobody died that I'm aware of. But we did that, and some of those didn't pan out. It was all rooted in, you know, either credible hearsay or just speculation.
Hopeful optimism. Yeah.
There we go.
I was really, really thinking that at least we would get Bayonetta. Like, Hideki Kamiya? He even said, like, you know, 2021, we'll say something then, you know, back, like, last year. And I'm like, okay, it's 2021. It's E3. Come on. You said it. Don't break my heart here. And my heart got broken, so.
But anyway, you were saying about your broader experience.
I mean, it was, I'm tired. I'm very tired. It's hard. Writing is hard, guys. You know, just, you know, everybody who's in my inbox saying your job is easy and you're a piece of shit. I just want you to know it's hard. Harder than you think it is. So I'm tired, but it's like the good kind of tired. I recognize the work that I did and the work we all did at Kotaku trying to cover all this stuff was actually really good. And, you know, we offer that unique perspective that other places maybe don't because, you know, we do cover things like wholesome directs and whatever. So I'm really proud of the work that we did. I'm really proud of the work that I did. I'm not so proud that some of the stuff that I did won't be seen. I guess I get to keep that writing in my back pocket for whenever those news announcements do break. Maybe.
Yeah. For whenever, when Bayonetta dies.
Well, I mean, if she dies, she just comes back, you know, from hell. I mean, that's her whole shtick anyway, so I'm not really worried about that. Yeah, I'm really tired. I'm looking forward to having Friday off, so. It's Juneteenth, everybody, just so you know.
Can I ask a question about Juneteenth since you brought it up?
Yeah.
So I looked at, because obviously I live in a very foreign country where we don't have Juneteenth, and it's such a silly name that I want to know what it's about. And then I realized, oh, actually, it's extraordinary. It's about freedom and about the emancipation of slavery, right? Is that, am I right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So why is it called Juneteenth? Why is it given this unbelievably anonymizing and ridiculous name?
All right. So Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves with the Emancipation Proclamation, and it was supposed to take place January 1st. So technically, every, you know, New Year's Day is like a celebration of the, you know, freedom of slaves in addition to being New Year's Day, right?
Okay.
But that was only for certain states. And I think some of the slaveholding states that were still in the Union, that didn't apply to. And, you know, if you issue the Emancipation Proclamation of a broken country, not all states are going to actually listen to you if they don't want to give up their slaves, right? Texas was one of those states that were like, yeah, fuck you, Abraham Lincoln. So the legend of Juneteenth is that, you know, because it's back in the 1860s that news travels so slowly, it was on June 19th that news, in 1865, I want to say, that news had finally reached Texas that, hey, Abraham Lincoln said you were free. And that's why we call it Juneteenth. Because
okay.
That's the day that the last slaves in Texas found out, oh, you're actually free. And then a big party happened. So that's Juneteenth.
Okay, that's cool. I had this horrible fear. It was like some weird sort of whitewashing name for it. So people didn't have to feel uncomfortable about what it was really about.
No.
Okay, good.
No.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
And we're back for a final segment of the day. Nathan, remind me what the final segment of the day is because I forgot.
The final segment is all the games that we lost this year. No. it is everything that didn't get announced at E3 this year. Because, yeah, I think that, I mean, I think people came in with high expectations like they always do for E3. But then also I think that those high expectations were maybe especially unwarranted given the year we just came out of.
A little unreasonable.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of things didn't really happen, and it was kind of not a bummer of an E3. Well, it was sort of a bummer, but I mean, it was a bit of a lull as far as these things go.
Which is fair. I'm hearing fan conspiracy theories on the internet that because Sony pulled out of E3 and they're having their own little thing like in a couple weeks, I'm actually not sure when that's supposed to happen. That's why stuff like Final Fantasy didn't get announced, because Sony wanted to hold that for itself, you know? So maybe all the things that we were expecting from E3 might happen because these developers are like, you know what, I'm going to take my toys and, you know, go over here. And that's when we'll get them.
I can't wait for Sony to announce Metroid Prime 4.
All right. or even EA. EA might have their own little thing, and I might finally get some more scheduled. So I'm going to get my BioWare, you know, news.
Yeah. Yeah. They're having their thing in July. And I would say that something BioWare is probably a lock for that. As for what, I mean, like we were saying on, I think, the previous E3 episode we did, it's probably going to be like a piece of concept art or whatever.
Again.
Yeah. Just a new one. It's going to be like a hyper-close zoom-in on Solus's bald head. Yeah, his forehead. It's going to be every pore of his skin. You're going to be like, wow, amazing. Ew. But anyway, yeah, I mean, definitely there are going to be some things, I think, that come out over, or that, you know, get announced over the course of the summer, because there's still a couple major shows yet to come, just like in July instead of June. And I mean, again, that's kind of closer to how I would prefer things just stay. We don't need them all rammed together anymore. You can spread them out over the course of the summer, in the fall, or whenever. People are going to pay attention no matter what when it's the bigger companies. They have built-in interest. They don't need something like E3. And I think they increasingly know it, which is why Sony, EA, Activision, none of them were there this year. And if I had to guess, those three will probably, I mean, maybe with the exception of Sony, will never be at E3 again. They don't need to be. And I think already EA and Activision both weren't, even when it was a live event. So I think that they know. They get it. But yeah, I think another interesting thing that happened is that we have this phenomenon where I don't think that more games are necessarily like getting rebooted mid-development or like getting big delays as a result of major occurrences during development. We're just hearing about it more. And so we heard about it in the case of Everwild, which is Rare's upcoming game. Upcoming in finger quotes, because who knows when it's coming out at this point. And then we heard about it a little while back for Metroid Prime 4. Like, we knew that game got rebooted in 2019. So there's almost, it was unlikely they were actually going to have anything for that here this year. And I mean, like, we just hear about that more. And so we have expectations that we're going to see certain games. And it's like, no, they had to restart development. But that happens a lot. Like, there's an IGN piece that I read recently about the kind of COVID-induced game delays. And a really good quote in that piece was, every game gets delayed. We just don't always hear about it. But I mean, games are, you know, really hard to make. And so internally, projected dates are moving around all the time. And so there are games that could be like, you know, making pretty good progress in development or whatever, 1 month or what have you. And so maybe someone feels confident enough to rumor monger to say like, yeah, we're making good progress. We're probably gonna have a trailer or something like that at an event like E3. And then things go catastrophically wrong. And it's like, never mind. Not so much on that.
Back in my rock, paper, shotgun days, I tried to establish something called the Walker Constant. I thought it'd be great if I could get myself my name in gaming terminology, which was whatever a release date is, add 6 months to it. That's just how I'd say, though, this game has just been announced. They're saying it's going to come out November 19th. So let's just add the Walker Constant and we're looking good for March next year, you know. And it worked. And then I was most successful with my Cyberpunk predictions. I literally month, just by sheer stupid luck, managed to predict month by month each delay and went which month it would happen, and received more abuse for that than I think anything else I'd ever written. I just, you know, like, I couldn't use Twitter for a week for the abuse pouring in when I said there was no way it was going to make it stated. It's what it, I can't remember what it was now, March or whatever it was aiming for. I said, it's not going to make March. It will be announced for September, slipped to October, more likely be around Christmas, right? I literally got exactly right. And no one ever apologized, which I thought was sad.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Ash. Thank you.
I'm sorry that happened.
I'm very smug and delighted that it happened. It was great. So yeah, I think it's fair to say, you know, I still don't understand. I guess it's because of the horrible pre-order culture. I still don't understand why they feel the need to announce release dates at the moment of announcing new game ideas.
Yeah, I mean, it's shareholders and stuff like that, I'm sure.
Pre-order Far Cry 6 now.
The conventional marketing wisdom is that you get an idea in people's heads and then you've got to like be forever present. So you can't let people forget about your thing. So you announce early and then you just keep on saying like, yeah, this exists. This is something that you should be excited about. This is something that you know, should be hyped about until the moment of release. But
brilliantly, I'm sorry for not remembering his name, but the lead on Bayonetta 3, he said earlier this year, just forget we're making it. Just forget we're making it. And when you hear something, you'll be happy. That's brilliant attitude.
I have that exact quote pulled up, actually. Okay, so what he said is, I understand that it's driving fans crazy. In light of that, my suggestion would be that maybe we should all reset and forget about Bayonetta 3. Then when something finally does happen, it'll be a nice surprise, won't it?
Yes! Like, which I respect, because that's basically how I've lived my life with all of my interpersonal relationships. Just don't expect anything and just be pleasantly surprised when something nice does happen. But it's Bayonetta 3. Mm-hmm. I love that game so much. I can't just forget about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bad time for Ash, like your particular games. You didn't get any Dragon Age, any Mass Effect, any Bayonetta. Like, I don't know. It's time to just quit video games forever now.
Which would make you all very too happy, so I won't do that. I remain here out of spite.
Nice. That's a good reason to stick around, in my opinion.
So I found that just not caring about E3 on such a deep level protects me from disappointment on most of these things. However, I do get excited about Nintendo Directs now. This has become who I am. And so the lack of Pokemon Legends made me a bit sad. It's coming out next year. They should have had, you know, they could have just showed me a Piplup running around in circles and I would have been happy. That would have been good.
Do we have any more Nintendo Directs on the calendar? Do we know?
I don't think we have any on the calendar.
They're very tight-lipped about that. Like, when are they supposed to announce the Switch Pro? Because I was thinking about that. Like, E3 has had this reputation of, like, being the place where, you know, console makers will announce their new consoles and how much you can buy them for and when you can buy them, right? And we have slowly gotten away from that, and now it's just all software. Like, there are no more hardware announcements that are usually made during E3 anymore. Like, they just do it on their own now. And I wonder when, because there's supposed to be a Switch Pro, when is that Switch Pro coming? When are we going to have that news officially?
Mm-hmm.
Whenever Nintendo's ready, because they say whatever the fuck they want to say when they want to say it.
Mm-hmm. They just don't care. And it's really odd for us to try to do our job properly, but they just don't care. They'll say it when they're good and ready, and they probably won't give anyone any warning, and then everyone will have to scramble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting too, because, you know, there's a lot of like fairly credible speculation and reporting that we would hear something soon about the Switch Pro. And then we didn't. And like, we ran a piece earlier today, Ian wrote it.
Yeah.
About like, why wasn't it at E3? And like, no one's really sure. I mean, again, I think that some of the people who were saying it would be at E3 were maybe did not have amazing sourcing on that. I think that the most telling quote was from our long lost and dearly mourned former coworker Jason Schreier, who even when he was talking about it, he was like, at one point he said like it might happen soon, and then when people were like, oh man, it's definitely going down, he was like, I would not say like might or probably about something that I couldn't, like I wouldn't phrase it that way if I had it pinned down. I don't actually know. I'm not sure. I, you know, would probably report it if I was, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so like, I think that there were other people who were not couching it in that way and were just being like, yeah, it's any second now, definitely for sure. And it's like, no, you guys don't know that. You're just saying that for Twitter clout. So yeah, I think that we got actually a lot of that on announcements. People online, on Twitter specifically, said were going to happen during E3 and then didn't. Similarly, like, there is almost certainly a XCOM-style Marvel game in development, and people were like, it's going to be at E3, and then it wasn't. Yeah, I think there's been a lot of that. But with Nintendo specifically, I also think that, man, like, Nintendo's weird, and this would not be the first time that they have changed when they're going to announce something specifically because they didn't like the people already knew or like canceled something. The example that Ian cited in his piece that is so funny to me is that Nintendo ended up pulling the plug on a live action Zelda series after the Wall Street Journal reported on it before Nintendo was ready to announce it. They were like, well, fine, you don't get a TV show then. Like, that's amazing. What other company would do that?
It's also hideous.
A company with like billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars.
It's also hideously childish and spiteful. It's not good that they did that.
Right.
What a bunch of dicks.
Yeah, and I mean, who knows if that's what happened here?
No, again, Nintendo knows on this, but yeah.
Yeah, Nintendo makes it very hard to know what's going on within their operation at any given moment, but you know, they have some very strange tendencies. And so at any rate, that resulted in them not making an announcement of the Switch Pro, which pretty much everyone knows exists. And it's just a matter of like, okay, when are we doing this thing for real? And I guess it's going to be later, which, you know, it's probably fine.
Because, I have a question.
Yeah, go for it.
How do we settle on Switch Pro?
Yeah.
Well, we've all been Switch amateurs up to this point. Just like fucking babies playing in the sand. And now we're about to like be professionals. So they're going to
get paid. Right?
That is yet to be seen, but unlikely. It means that like it's a Switch the size and make of a briefcase. Carry it around and be like, I've got all my important documents in here. You want to talk about business? I know business.
Do we have an actual explanation as to why we've settled? Because it's like PS4 Pro and we just are uncreative. I mean, look at Nintendo from the Wii to the Wii U, which I don't know if that's creative or just kind of silly.
Super Switch. I was really hoping for Super Switch. But Mike shot
whatever
me down
Nintendo
on that.
Names it, it's going to surprise the hell out of us and possibly upset us because it's going to be silly again.
Maybe. I think they're going to go with something. Like, it's got to involve Switch. It can't just be an out of the blue name this time. So it'll probably just be, like, the Switch Plus or the Switch.
It's going to be called the new Switch. Like, something really uncomfortably stupid like that.
I hope it'll be fun. Yeah. There'll be many memes.
Yeah, let's see. Otherwise, things that also weren't there that were a little bit curious. No Splatoon 3. Even though Nintendo did show that pretty recently. I mean, I think that was just a product of them being like, we can't cram everything into this showcase. Like, we already revealed this pretty recently, so whatever. I was kind of surprised by, like, the total lack of Final Fantasy 16.
Because, again, you and me both.
Yeah.
Elder Scrolls 6 Hammerfell. They still haven't announced that.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's going to be... Even back when they first announced Starfield, they were like, yes, we're working on the next Elder Scrolls. It's going to come out a long time after Starfield. And so if Starfield's still not going to be out for a while. And by the way, like, I would not put money on that end of 2022 date.
No.
I would say that it is almost certainly going to get delayed once, if not more.
The Walker but constant, anyway. You mean?
Huh? Hmm.
You got to apply your Walker constant. For its release.
Oh, yes,
come on,
yes.
This is going to catch on. This is catching on. So since Elder Scrolls 6 was... even before Elder Scrolls 6 was announced, I've always written about it online as Elder Scrolls 6 Hammerfell. And my goal is to just really to scare them into thinking that I suck. Because if it is that, if that's the location, it will just have, I just want, every time I do it, I want someone at the developer just to be really frightened.
Who told him?
That would be great.
We also didn't get Fable or BioShock.
Yeah, I mean, BioShock, who knows? Right. Like, I don't know. We'll see the revived BioShock when we see it. Yeah, Fable's a little bit surprising because it's actually been announced. But at the same time, like, I don't know. It seems like some stuff is happening Is Fable being made by Rare now? No, who's doing Fable?
I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, what we've seen of it is so, like, insubstantial.
We've seen of it as much as we've seen of Elder Scrolls 6, just a screen with a name on it.
And I think that's one of those things where, again, they probably announced it too soon. It's being made by Playground Games, not Rare. But anyway, yeah, I will see it when we see it. There are all these games that, like, theoretically exist. But what does that mean in terms of where they're at in development? Like, who knows? They're being made, and they'll either one day be released or be canceled before they ever come out.
Do you ever get to the point with these games where you kind of just don't want, like, Beyond Good and Evil 2, I don't want it to come
there
out.
There we go.
Oh, I thought about that, too. It's like, you don't want it anymore, huh?
Well, no. Yeah, no, I mean,
it's too late.
Go ahead.
No, that's it. It's just too late. They took too long, and I'm done now. Yeah. I love Beyond Good and Evil. It's a beautiful, wonderful game. Everything I've seen of the sequel looks awful, like, supremely awful, and now I don't care anymore. It's too late. It's done.
Yeah, I mean, my hot take on that, too, is that, like, yeah, like you're saying, what they've shown just looks like really, I don't know, it does not at all feel like the game that should be the sequel to Beyond Good and Evil 2. Because, I mean, the first was, like, a kind of mid-budget game. It was very anti-establishment, very much about, like, telling a sort of, you know, smaller scale story involving, like, somebody who's a journalist, which is a neat thing that I'm not at all biased about. But then, like, the second is they're going to be, like, it's going to be this massive universe, and not only is it, like, a, you know, mega budget game, but it's going to draw on, like, heaps of unpaid labor because of Hit Record, which is a Joseph Gordon-Levitt run project where the idea is that people can contribute art to projects, and if their stuff gets selected, they'll get paid, but if not, then what they've done is free labor, so that sucks. And then it's also coming from Ubisoft, a company whose own internal issues at this point could be the storyline for a Beyond Good and Evil game if they were not real. And it's like, this is just so antithetical to everything about the original that I don't know how you could be interested in it if you liked the original. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that, I don't know, I think at this point they're like, who knows what's going on with that game? But yeah. Same sort of deal. I don't know if I can bring myself to be interested in it at this point. We'll see.
I don't know if there's ever a game that took so long that I don't care about it anymore. I'm trying to think. Don't think that'll happen. Because most, I don't care about games. Somebody clip that and take that out of context. I don't care about games like that. The only thing that gets me out of bed is, you know, my BioWare stuff, and I like to, when things like are shown in front of me, if they like spark joy, I'm excited about them then. But if I don't hear about it or whatever, if it's something that I've never heard of before, I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter to me. I'm very not apathetic. I'm just very chill.
The word you're looking for about is healthy. You are healthy.
Wait,
you haven't beaten that out of me yet, games industry.
Yeah, no, you have a healthy relationship with this medium and hobby. That's weird. Something's wrong with you, and nothing is wrong with literally everyone else. It's just you.
It is just me.
Yeah. Anyway, it feels like that's a good place to put a pin in this one.
Yes, and maybe we will be here next year talking about another E3. Maybe we'll have just gotten off planes and finally gotten home after going back to the first physical E3 in like 2 years, or maybe it blew up and the ESA no longer exists, but you'll have to wait a year to see something like that. And you have been listening to Kotaku Split Screen. Thank you, John, for joining us. We can find John's work on Kotaku all the time. He'll be running the site on Friday. Is there anywhere else you want people to like find your work?
Please look at buriedtreasure.org. That would be lovely. Thank you very much.
And you have been listening to Kotaku Split Screen Podcast. You can reach us via email at splitscreen@kotaku.com and on Twitter at Uncle Fahey, who is not here, but go find him anyway. And at Vahn16, V-A-H-N-1-6, that's Nathan. Or you can find me on Twitter at AdAshtra, that's A-D-A-S-H-T-R-A. And John, do you want me to share your Twitter? Or would you
sure,
prefer
no,
I
go
not?
Right ahead, that's fine.
And you can find John Walker on Twitter at Botherer. So good job on you for securing that Twitter name. Our producer is Michaela Heck, and our sound engineer is Ryan Allen. Hope you had a great E3, and we'll see you next time.